Hello again. We're coming to you from the trenches. I'm Rita Sands.
We're protesting no jobs for war.
Today, we'll take you to a protest at a UIC job fair, and we'll hear about a proposed new nuclear power plant in Illinois, and we'll hear from a woman who was living in Belarus near the Chernobyl plant at the time of the meltdown that took place 19 years ago this month. We'll also speak with the host of a popular police watchdog radio program called Bad Cop, No Donut. That and more coming up. For independent news and information from Chicago and around the world, visit our internet address at www.chicago.indymedia.org. Last Tuesday, about 350 people crowded into Clinton Junior High School for a little publicized public hearing on a proposed new nuclear power plant to be built a few miles east of the town that lies in central Illinois, straight south of Bloomington. Dave Kraft, executive director of the Evanston-based Nuclear Energy Information Service, attended the hearing. He says if energy giant Exelon is allowed to push through their proposal, they will not only be on their way to building another nuclear power plant in Illinois, but they will jumpstart a whole nuclear industry.
We kind of look at this newest Exelon venture as return of the vampires, because they're going to be sucking at your wallet anytime soon.
What do you mean by this project will suck people's wallets dry?
Well, the nuclear industry is counting heavily on its friends in the Bush-Cheney administration and in Congress to authorize legislation which would guarantee all kinds of construction loans at taxpayer expenses. Whether these people who are taxpayers would ever get a single electron from any nuclear plant is totally irrelevant. So once again, you have this already mature industry taking advantage of the public trough to build the next generation of reactors, essentially.
Don't we also subsidize other sources of energy like coal and natural gas? Don't we subsidize those also? I mean, people can just say, well, we subsidize all these. Why should we separate nuclear plants from that subsidy?
Yeah, there are a lot of energy. Almost all the energy resources do get some sort of subsidization. But the so-called mature industries are the ones that scream the loudest about free market competition, get government off of our backs, and blah, blah, blah. And nuclear is one of those. It's an industry that's 55, 60 years old, certainly as old as the coal industry, you know. And these are folks who are free marketeers until it's time to pick up the tab, and then they're willing to transfer it to the public. The second piece of that, though, is if the public has to pay for something, they might as well get the maximal amount of benefit. And this is an industry that not only is inefficient, expensive, and dangerous as an energy resource, it carries the added weight of increasing the opportunity for nuclear terrorism and nuclear proliferation both at home and worldwide. You don't have that kind of liability with renewable energy resources or conservation. So just from the hierarchy of what's preferable, if you're going to subsidize anyone, subsidize an energy industry that doesn't have such terrible deficits.
Now, it's my understanding that this permit has already been awarded for Clinton?
No. This is the very first stage of the licensing process, the formal licensing process. It's called the Early Site Permit. Essentially, what it allows Exelon and other utilities to do is plow through in a very generic, perfunctory kind of way the paperwork that would give them the formal okay to use a particular site. And the site they chose in this case is the Clinton Nuclear Reactor near Bloomington Normal in downstate Illinois. And the reason they picked it is because there was another reactor that was supposed to be built there but never was because it was too expensive. So they have the real estate. They already have a lot of the clearances okay from the first go-round with nuclear power. And they want to make this a quick and fast deal so that they can move on to the next phases of licensing, which will take place in the next 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Why is this happening now, though, if it hasn't happened in the last 20 years? Why is it happening now? Does it have anything to do with the energy bill that's going through the Congress?
This is make or break time for Exelon and the rest of the nuclear folks. They have all of their stars aligned properly. They own the White House. They own the Congress. They own the Department of Energy. It also comes at a time when the public is being rattled by warnings of global warming and all kinds of other, you know, nuclear mayhem around the planet. So if they don't get the job done now, if they don't force nuclear down our throats now, it can only get worse for them later on. So they're pulling out all the stops.
Is this also happening on a national level, that permits are being applied for or being preliminarily awarded?
Yes, there are two other sites under consideration by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. One is in Virginia by the Dominion utility there, and another one is down in Mississippi. So these are early site permits. Again, it's putting the site in a land bank, so to speak, for later selection for a nuclear reactor. You'll see more of that, though, going on if these three, or any of these three, get the go-ahead.
Do you know what kind of plant they plan to build?
The NRC has licensed a list of different designs which have not been commercially built yet, but which they have they've looked through some of the prototypes and given the okay. So Exelon and the other utilities can select from this list of approved designs. There may be other designs that are added to the list at a later date, but any of those would be eligible theoretically to go at this site. Currently, in the early site permit process, Exelon named two different reactor designs, one by Westinghouse, one by General Electric, that they might consider using at the Clinton site should they decide to build there.
Do you know how, if those are especially safe, or if, you know, how they rate those two designs?
Well, the industry likes to talk about so-called inherently safe reactors, or the next generation of reactors, which are inherently safe. It's kind of a chuckle because, first of all, it implies that perhaps the previous generation wasn't inherently safe, and it certainly isn't. There's nothing inherently safe about storing 1,000 Hiroshima's worth of radiation in a building, no matter how well reinforced it is. These new designs, many of them, have their own unique design features which are positive, but also have unique design features which are negative. There was one reactor design that Exelon was a part of which relied heavily on the use of graphite. They claimed it was an inherently safe reactor, but as people might recall, graphite was the big problem at the Chernobyl explosion 19 years ago. It burns, and it distributed the radioactive core around the world. So every reactor design will have its own set of flaws and idiosyncrasies. None of these new ones have been built and have a real operational history, kind of like the proof will be in the pudding when they get around to it.
Is this one of those smaller nuclear plants that at least I believe it was Dick Cheney was talking about being part of the new nuclear renaissance?
Actually, the reactor I mentioned a moment ago with the graphite was called a pebble bed reactor. It is a very small modular design, roughly one-tenth the size of your standard reactor today. But the ones that Exelon described in its early site permit in Clinton were the full-blown folks. They were about 1,000 megawatts, which is about the size of what you have at Braidwood and Byron and what you used to have at Zion already. So these are very large reactors that they're looking at putting at this site.
Mm-hmm. Now, this public hearing comes the same month that an article came out in the Chicago Tribune about Exelon having no plans to change its storage of nuclear waste, despite the National Academy of Sciences saying that the way it's being stored right now is not safe. I'd like to hear your comment about that article, about just juxtaposing that with the possibility of this new plant also having unsafe waste being stored on the property.
Mm-hmm. The article you're referring to in the Chicago Tribune was written by Robert Maynor a couple of weeks ago. We actually spoke with him about that and had an op-ed appear in the Tribune after it appeared. It's interesting, just as I said before, that these nuclear executives are free marketeers until it comes to picking up the tab, and then they want someone else to do it. They also talk about the best sound science in the National Academy until the National Academy disagrees with them, and then it's a matter of disagreeing professionals. Well, the Academy of Sciences had a very scathing report that came out stating that some of the reactors in operation, many of them in Illinois, have a very, very vulnerable reactor design in which the spent fuel pools, or the old, hot, irradiated fuel coming out of the reactors, is literally stored above ground. This is extremely vulnerable in incidences where you would have a terrorist attack or, God forbid, an accidental airline, or maybe not accidental after 911, an airliner crashing into this structure. It's not in the hugely reinforced containment building that they always boast about. It's in a building that roughly has 18 inches of reinforced concrete, and the roof, which is roughly a glorified Sam's Club when you analyze it. This is housing the entire 30-year reactor inventory of the reactors at Dresden, the two reactors at Quad Cities, and it's a slightly different design, but even the reactor down at Clinton and the two reactors at LaSalle. These are all vulnerable to this particular kind of problem. If those spent fuel pools are hit, let's say, by an airliner or by terrorists, the water can and would drain away, could result in an intensely hot fire, which would distribute these millions of curies of radioactive materials around the countryside. That's what the National Academy was complaining about. They made some very specific recommendations. They severely criticized the Nuclear Regulatory Commission for its excessive secrecy and inability to get the information they need to further examine the safety and vulnerability of the plants. So we have a situation where our nation's best scientists and credentialed people are criticizing the industry, and the industry just brushes it off. And that's where Chairman John Rowe says, well, we have no plans to do anything at our reactors at this point in terms of making it safer for the radioactive waste to be there. Yet at the same time, now they want to add to Illinois' radioactive waste inventory by perhaps building new reactors. For us, this makes absolutely no sense at all. It's like building the John Hancock building without bathrooms and then saying, you know, we don't even need porta potties outside. So we think the industry is way out of line on this one, and perhaps Congress will have to intervene to order them to make the changes to safeguard Illinois, which also, folks should know, has the world's busiest airport within 25 flying minutes of every reactor that we're talking about.
Now, the article says that the reason why they don't use dry flasks to put this waste material into, it doesn't have anything to do with money, but they don't say what it has to do with. What do
That's
you
correct.
Think it has to do with?
Right. There was a mention also that Exelon tries to minimize the exposure to its workers, and every time you move the fuel, you're exposing your workers. Well, the fact of the matter is they have to do it anyway when they take the fuel out of the reactor and put it in the spent fuel pool, and they will have to do it again at a time when the materials have to be moved off-site. It's better, many people believe, to put it in dry casks and distribute that inventory so it's much harder to have a catastrophic type of accident. And you can actually do this in ways that still minimize your worker exposure. That was the only reason that was given publicly by Exelon to this point is their resistance to dry cask storage, even though they have already begun to do it at Dresden and at Quad Cities.
They're using dry casks there. Because
they're using dry casks there, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So what it is, I think, really is more of a public relations thing of not wanting to get the public stirred up that maybe there is a problem here that they seriously have to deal with at a time when they're trying to also persuade the public that it's a good time to have the next generation of nuclear power here in Illinois.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of the dry cast storage method?
It's a lesser of evil choices. We've had opposition to it in the past for a variety of reasons. And that was based on the fact that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission was very incompetent in licensing the designs of some of the ones that are being used today. They actually violated their own regulations twice in getting some of these casks built even before they had authorized the design. This resulted in a couple of accidents on the Great Lakes, one in Michigan and one in Wisconsin. So from a historic standpoint, we weren't too thrilled with the concept. But after 9-1-1 and based on the extreme vulnerabilities of the wet pools at Quad Cities, at the two at Dresden, and also down in LaSalle and in Clinton, we feel that moving to dry casks improves the safety margin at the site, but not just building the casks and putting them out there. There's a much more enhanced version of this kind of storage that we have nicknamed HOSS, H-O-S-S. It stands for Hardened On-Site Storage, which would not only distribute the casks, but it would site them in the wells of bermed piles of soil or whatever, so you wouldn't get a good direct line of sight attack by a shoulder-held missile or a truck bomb or something like that. It's a much more elaborate type of storage, but it's one that we think, coupled with the dry casks, gives Illinois a much greater degree of safety and less vulnerability to a terrorist attack.
Given a worst-case scenario, like if one of these storage facilities were to explode, how far would the destruction spread?
It's hard to specifically say what would happen or what wouldn't happen because there are so many variables. Even with a reactor accident, everything from the weather and the time of day down to the amount of spent fuel you're talking about. If we're talking about the spent fuel pool, there have been some analyses already done. One was done by Jan Baye, which said that the damage could be hundreds of billions of dollars and contaminate, you know, hundreds of square miles with radioactive debris from a spent fuel pool. Physicians for Social Responsibility has put together computer models, and the Chicago chapter has shown some of these computer models of spent fuel pool accidents. And we've actually seen the plumes go as far away as Indiana from the Braidwood plant, for example. And depending on which other reactors are involved and what direction the wind is blowing, could go as much as 100 miles away. So you're talking about a pretty significant piece of real estate, and not all real estate is made equal, that's for sure. We have to bear in mind that Illinois is primarily an agricultural state, too. So anytime you're talking about a radioactive accident in an agricultural region, you're essentially subjecting Illinois to what Belarus is going through after the Chernobyl accident of 19 years ago. To this date, a lot of their produce is still contaminated and not allowed on European markets. It would just simply be devastating for an agricultural state like Illinois to endure almost any kind of a nuclear accident. If you're talking about dry casks, since you have less fuel in each of the casks, that reduces the amount of potential for spreading more material. So that's why we at this point are saying it's a lesser of evil choice, but it does give you a little bit more of an advantage to contain the accident in a smaller area.
If there's anything you'd like to add, please do so, but that's all my questions.
Well, I think, you know, folks here in Illinois, we encounter people who don't even understand how nuclear reliant the state is. And we are now moving to this so-called nuclear renaissance, you used the term a moment ago, that the industry wants. It was a bad idea the first time around. It hasn't gotten any better the second time around. In fact, it's even gotten worse because the industry expects so much more from the public, both in terms of secrecy, in terms of more money, and in terms of fewer benefits and safeguards, as well as public input. We want the people of Illinois to get aroused by this. We want them to get Governor Blagojevich and the whole state apparatus opposing any new licensing of reactors. And the final reason for this is that any new reactors licensed will doom far into the future any ability to get renewable energy resources established. They simply take too much of a market share out to make renewables cost effective. So if people are out there wanting renewable resources, they had better make sure that the nuclear industry gets defeated early on before they get a chance to build a new reactor.
Mm-hmm. And the state has the power to stop this licensing?
The state will have opportunities to intervene, and they also have laws at the local level that the utilities would have to comply with. There may also be some new laws that need to be enacted which would require certain kinds of safeguards, which the federal government would have no authority over. These are the kinds of dialogues and creative mechanisms that we want Governor Blagojevich and the state legislators to work with the environmental community on to make sure that we're not bulldozed by the federal bullies of the large energy consortiums that are going on out there now.
That was Dave Kraft, Executive Director of the Nuclear Energy Information Service, found on the web at www.neis.org.